In 2007, the Babylon podcast was our last best hope for more Lost Tales. We thought it failed. But after WonderCon, it became something more. Our last best hope for more Lost Tales geeking. The year is 2008. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast. Hi, welcome back to the Babylon Podcast. I'm apparently the Uber rumor starter for this month.
I'm the one who won't shut up.
And holy Olympics, it's Kashi Poo here sporting 8 gold medals hanging on his little toilet seat.
That was what was glittering every time Kosh spoke. It was his gold medals sparkling in the light of the Zocalo.
Okay, now I just got a cross flash of Kosh as Mr. T, and that was just scary.
I wonder what it would look like to watch. Yeah, exactly. I would love to see Kosh in the swimming pool. That'd be funny. That'd be hilarious. Huh?
Yeah.
That's an image.
Would it be scary or would it be intriguing? The world wants to know.
We have so much big news. Big show tonight. Big show tonight. But some of our cool news is that Summer and Mike are there in the new Farpoint Media Studios, aren't you?
Yes.
The first B5 broadcast from the ivory tower that is Farpoint Media.
The palatial studios of Draco Vista.
Mm-hmm.
That's what.
Yes.
So,
they're so big, that's why the echo is still in there.
Yeah, there's a lot of echo because it's a gigantic space.
So what do you think, Summer? Tell us.
It's nice. It is. There's a little bit more room for people to sit and congregate, which will be tested tomorrow night when we do Slice. Literally tested.
It's a little cooler in here. It's not quite as hot.
The heat is not actually just congealing in the room and calling more heat to come join the party. So we got a nice little bit of airflow in here. And
it's quieter because most of the office stuff is in another room.
Yes.
Which helps.
Mm-hmm.
And now the big question, is there a magic fridge?
There is a magic fridge. Moving the magic fridge took 3 trips.
Wow.
Really?
Wow.
Really?
And has Michael had a chance to work on the decor? I mean, has he created a whole look for the place yet, or is it still just...
Yeah, I've got this beautiful quilt hanging up in the corner to try and knock down some of the echo. Other than that, I haven't put anything else up.
You know that scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where Indiana looks down into the pit? And you see the floor. He says, "You know, Indy, why does the floor move?"
Yeah.
And when I walked in today, this was the first time. Yet last week it was kind of clear. This week I walked in, the entire floor is covered with rolled cables. So it was like it was
damn it,
like
Summer. Now you're going to make me have to take a picture so that we to put up on the
site. I thought that's what the kid. He's got a camera sitting on one of the speakers there.
Okay,
so I figured,
I'll take a shot of it.
It's just
you should. It's day one.
All over the floor, and it amused me when I first walked in. I'm like, there's no way I can get over to the chairs without stepping on some of them.
That's very nice. Yes. Well, congratulations, Michael.
Thank you. I think it's going to be very nice.
Yes, it will be.
Now, we have some other news I think we need to get to, and that has to do with some of the rumor starters, correct?
It does.
Why don't you first share some rumors before you give us the truth?
Well, some of the rumors involved some very interesting speculation on the parts of some people. Some people were like, oh no, she's not leaving the show, is it? Like, no, she's got a really big guest coming up. And then Kurt's like, no, they're actually going to make independent B5 fan films. And like, just, they're going to do a B5 franchise of films just like Star Trek Phase 2 with the new Voyager stuff. I'm like, oh, we are? Cool.
I got the Garibaldi hairline.
And then someone else speculated that maybe Jeffrey had been tapped to produce a Robot Chicken Babylon 5 episode, which I think would just rock.
Yeah. Get on it, Jeffrey.
Well, they've done everything else. It's time for B5 to get a turn on Chicken.
Hey, I don't think they've done like Salvage 1 or have they done Thunderbirds on Robot Chicken?
Oh, yeah.
I don't. They
yeah,
did?
Yeah, they did.
Really? Jeez, they have done everything.
Really,
so yeah, there's a whole entire thread of rumors, and I blame Horses Boy and Gary from Jacksonville for promulgating most of them. But no, it was very simple. Mitch, known in the forums as Omaha Star, sent me an article that Jan had posted to the news groups saying they were looking for someone who was an expert in the B5 novels. And I'm like, well, I'm not an expert, but I have them all, and I know the content of half of them, at least, more than half of them, pretty well. So I responded to their call for help, and apparently when my name came in, I shot to the top of their wanted list. And the next day they said, okay, here's the project. Can you help us out? Oh, sure. The project was vetting some of the data, some of the information that was in the chronology, the B5 chronology that was out there. There was a timeline that was on a website out there, and also the timeline that was in the B5 magazines. So there was a lot of any information related to the novels that was in the chronology that was on the web is what they wanted to verify. So I ended up helping out where the entries for the novels were, and since some of them were vague, I actually condensed some of the entries into like a paragraph about what happened in the books. Now, some of the later books, the trilogies, were already well covered. But like the earlier books, like the first three or four books, were the information of them wasn't really the information that you needed from the book.
Okay.
You know, that was pertinent to what was happening in the story. So I went through and I cleaned that up. I filled in. He had a whole lot of things that had question marks in them. And I actually went through the chronology that was in the magazine to fill in some of those holes.
Now, were the magazines the ones that you already had? Because I know you've got a collection of those.
I have the entire collection. Yes, I finished out the missing 9 issues. I had always had the entire U.S. run, the Volume 2, which was like 24 issues. But there were 9 issues that came out the previous year that were only available in the U.K. And I finally got all 9 of those, I think about... What year is this? This is 2008. Yeah, 2003, 2004, I finally got my last couple of missing issues. So I have the entire run, the first volume of all 9 issues, plus the second volume of 24.
So you had all the research materials right at your fingertips.
Uh-huh. And like I said, I'm one of the few people, probably one of the few people that owns all the books, or at least I thought I did. I can't find my copy of Third Space. I thought I bought that.
I got a copy.
I it's probably easy to find, but at least, you know, the cool thing is I have the books that are out of print that people can't find now.
Right.
So I just went through, I flipped through the first couple of books going, oh yeah, that happened here. And so that information will be in the new Babylon 5, the chronology of Babylon 5, which was, I think, put up on the website, Babylon5scripts.com, either yesterday or today.
Right, and it's also up on the Babylon Podcast website as well. You'll find information and a link to the script book page. So.
Yes, and the cool thing...
Well done, Summer.
The cool thing is I get a copy of the book.
Uh-huh.
I get a one of the volumes of the script books that I didn't have, which is, and I since I had, you know, I need volume 10 among a couple of others, so they're going to give me a copy of volume 10 and another book. So that's cool.
And a big fat check?
No, the books are the check.
That's bastards.
No. Oh, it's good. It's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Trust me.
It is good.
So does this mean that you'll be able to modify the timeline and be like able to like just sort of stick in, you know, certain like, you know, years and dates and places, you know, like episode 22 of the Babylon podcast was created, and just sort of make it as if the podcast series has been going on along the timeline, you know?
No, I was not able to do any of that.
That's all right. We'll just put a time capsule together and shoot it off into deep space.
Yes, we can do that. But yeah, no, working on that was really fun because it reminded me there's some tidbits in like the first three or four novels that are almost throwaway, but they actually add to some of what happened in the series. So we're going to have to look into that a little bit more in depth. Later.
Yeah, I tried reading the first one, Voices, and it was just so god-awful, I never finished it.
Well, hopefully the entries in the chronology book, I've condensed it down to the important stuff. There's actually something really, really significant that happens in the second book. Is it second book or third book? Accusations. That is pivotal to the relationship between Talia and Susan. And I completely forgot about it. It's pivotal to... there's one thing happens that's pivotal to Talia's development, and in the other book is something pivotal to their relationship. I'm like, okay, we probably should have not forgotten about that, but I think maybe 10 people read the books.
Right, I was going to say, like, I started that first one and thought it was so awful. I never touched any of them until I got around to picking up the Psycor trilogy. So, yeah, we'll have to discuss that further. But well done, Summer. That's good news. That's really cool.
Yeah, very cool. And when will this be out?
I believe... Let me see. When is that coming out? I think September?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're already... You know, they've announced it, which means they're going to be taking orders for it.
Right? Yeah, right now you can pre-order it. So I'm guessing it's going to be available sometime in September. But the other cool thing, and alas, only the people who listen to the live feed will be able to know this, at the very bottom of that page is a link. If you're reading the page too fast, you'll miss it. But until August 23rd, fans will get to submit questions to JMS about any of the TV movies.
I've got a question.
Well, you have to go to the website and click the link and submit your question. But they are preparing a book called Babylon 5 Scripts of J. Michael Straczynski, the TV Movies, to come out later in the fall. And this is a quote from the website. With this book is a special opportunity. For the first time, J. Michael Straczynski is letting fans ask any question they want about the four TV movies, Third Space, River of Souls, Legend of the Rangers, or The Lost Tales. So if you have a question for the Great Maker about any of those four movies, go to Babylon5Scripts.com, find the link. It's
What about in the beginning?
Apparently, I think they're doing different volumes. I don't know if they're doing different volumes or if they're including all of them in one TV movie, but these four movies, he's opening up to fans.
Yeah, I was going to say, how about Call to Arms? That wasn't mentioned.
I know. In the beginning and Call to Arms weren't mentioned, but I thought it was going to be covered. Alas, they're not. But those four, he's opening the floor to questions. And you have until August 23rd to submit those questions to the Great Maker. And that deafening sound you hear is everybody in the chat room running to their computers and going to that website.
So, Tim, what's your one question going to be?
One of the things that made Babylon 5 what it is that it has this very definite chronology. Things happen, characters react to that, and events play off of what goes on, okay? Third Space is plopped right in the middle of the whole shebang. It's right after the Shadow War ends, and it's just as the quarantine is established by the Clark administration, okay? And they make a point of that at the very beginning about the blockade, okay? So here comes this thing, and as Sheridan says in the intro, you know, this is when we made contact with Third Space. We almost didn't survive. I hope we never make contact again. Okay, so if that takes place in that chronology, yet in the show, nobody says anything about it. You would think even just somebody would say, oh, we took care of Third Space. We can handle this. You know, I mean, just in passing, nothing. And I get it in terms of the real world. He wrote the script at the behest of TNT, you know, for all those reasons that are out there. But as the creator, how does he, what is it in his mind that makes it so it fits in there and not disturb the fabric of the universe?
Hmm.
I'm just curious to know, you know, from the creative end of it, you know, what do you say about that? You're just plopping this thing in. So, anyways, that's, like I said, I got to figure out how to condense that down.
Summer, what's your question going to be?
From those four movies, I would have to ask, I would have to limit my question to Legend of the Rangers because I am in a rare camp. I know a lot of people really, really, really didn't like River of Souls. I thought River of Souls was better than Legend of the Rangers. And I don't understand what was the point of the holographic gunner station in Legend of the Rangers.
Legend of the Rangers?
Yeah.
I think they were just trying to do something, quote, cool and different.
I have to believe that had to have been interference on some producer's part who was obsessed with video games.
Could be.
So, yeah. So somebody higher up who said, yeah, put this in, it'll be cool, look like a video game, and then we can make a video game out of Legend of the Rangers. And JMS went, son of a bitch, this guy's 12 years old, he doesn't know what he's talking about, shit, but he's got the money. Okay, whatever you say.
Right, right. I don't know.
Because I got nothing. If that's the case, I got nothing.
Have you checked? Well, I mean, I'm not telling you not to submit it, but check. I think there was something about that on Lurker's Guide.
I will have to go check.
Yeah.
But,
I like River Souls. I thought it was fine.
Yeah, I did too.
In fact, I liked it better than Third Space. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that River of Souls as a standalone fits in much nicer in the Babylon 5. I mean, it was there, you know, it had Lockley and Zach as the head of security, you know, so it fit into the chronology very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the other things I have issues with Third Space, I think it's the kind of thing that I wish it played out across episodes, then it would have been a much more credible threat, I thought. But we can get into that when we get to that part.
Yes, we can.
Anything else for our opening, or should we go ahead and take a break? Oh,
you know what my question would be?
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
Dear JMS, what will it take to get you to come onto the Babylon podcast and talk about the TV movies?
Ooh, that's a good one. I like that one. We'll submit that. Everybody submit that one.
That's the best question I've heard so far.
And to make it relevant to that, will you come on the Babylon podcast and talk about the TV movie?
Yeah.
That'd be funny. That would be fun.
Yes.
All right, everybody out there, that's the question to submit. Submit your own, but submit that one too.
Oh, you guys are instigating trouble. I can smell it.
So what are you guys geeking on tonight?
We are talking about The Illusion of Truth.
Ooh.
Yes. This
ISN comes on board to do their documentary. Yeah.
This episode, I remember this episode, so we're going to have some fun talking about this one.
Yes.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and come right back.
On the next Interstellar Network News, an exclusive look inside Babylon 5. We'll take you aboard the Rebel headquarters in the aftermath of the Shadow War. Then he broke his allegiance to Earth Command. Now find out what the future holds for Captain Sheridan and his renegade crew.
Nothing will be able to stop us.
Plus, a former Babylon 5 official speaks out against his old boss.
He has like a god complex.
An in-depth report
on the next Babylon 5.
Jericho, a small, ordinary Kansas town. Normal until something happened.
All right, it looks like the explosion came from the west, maybe Denver.
What if it was an attack, Sheriff? And there's chaos out there? You might not want the wrong people knowing that Jericho was still here.
I love the community feel of everybody having to work together after this big disaster. And even though they have their own problems, they come together when they have to.
Now we can get the power back on. We can find out how big this thing is. If we have to, we can fight. We can fight anybody. We can fight all enemies. The only way that's going to happen is if we work together.
Fans have already been vocal about this series, but it's time to give them a new voice.
Having grown up on SAC bases, that's Strategic Air Command bases, nuclear war was a reality for me. When I first saw the previews for Jericho, I was really interested to see how Hollywood was going to portray what happened after a nuclear event.
Join your hosts, Heidi, Suzanne, and Larissa, for Future Traditions, a podcast devoted to all things Jericho.
We're just holding on to these traditions like nothing happened out there?
We're holding on to these traditions because of what happened out there.
Find us at www.jerichopodcast.blogspot.com.
Digging down into the most obscure facts in fandom, this is
And here we are to talk about the power of propaganda.
Yes. And the illusion of truth.
Yes. You have to wonder, did JMS have a bad taste in his mouth from a really, really rancid media reporter experience? Or
well,
is he just playing with the type of stuff we saw in World War II and the Cold War? And
well, I think it's a lot of that, and also it touches on some of the McCarthyism of the 50s in America.
Oh, yeah.
The Lurker's Guide, I checked on that today just for grins. He makes comment, JMS does, that he got a start as a reporter and saw, you know, in some ways this is... Reaction is not the right word. What do I want to say? You know, it's just reusing some of his observations of what some journalists would do to get a story done.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually goes to great pains on the Lurker's Guide to say he's not anti-reporter, he's not anti-press, he doesn't have a personal bone to pick. It's just that in the scope of the story, as he's telling, this is what's required, and yes, you know, as you said, Summer, this is stuff that went on in World War II, on all sides.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you paint the enemy in as bad a light as you possibly can. You have to dehumanize them. And that was one of the things that was really interesting watching this, and watching the final ISN report.
Oh, yeah.
They go to great pains to paint Sheridan as the great war hero who is diseased and just needs to be healed. You know, I mean, and you want to talk about really, you know, they don't even demonize him. It's really interesting that way. You know, it's almost a core, you know, and it almost gives it, I hate to say it, but it's that illusion of truth.
Yeah, they didn't try to dehumanize him. They tried to garner pity for him.
Right.
So, you know, and seeing then what they did later. It all falls into the plan that they had when they actually captured him. It's kind of scary that they were plotting that out that far in advance.
Yeah, it was interesting watching this again. This is one I haven't watched in a long time. I got a very visceral response as I was watching it, knowing how all the stuff was going to be twisted and seeing that report and still at the very end where they have Franklin, they ask him about the cryotubes. And he has to make the bald-faced lie,
mm-hmm.
You know, which gives credence to everything else that they're saying.
Yep.
So So even though everything ISN is fabricated, there's that one lie on the part of our heroes that you know, lends the illusion of truth, again, to the ISN report. Really well done. Really well done that way. I liked Zach at the beginning, the way he handles the ISN reporters, or doesn't, ultimately, because the camera comes out of the box. But uh-huh. he almost out-Garibaldi's Garibaldi in that, you know?
That's you an know? Interesting way to look at it.
Well, you know, I mean, he comes up, he's blustered, you know, I don't say blustered, but he's like, you know, he tells the guy, look, move out of the way, you're going to have my foot up your butt. And the guy doesn't, so he turns around and whips out his PPG and blows the lock off the case. And, well, you know, one of his associates says, good shooting, Chief. Oh, don't compliment me until you find out what I was shooting at. You know, looking straight at Dan Randall. It's like, yes, perfect. You know, it's what Garibaldi would have done, just ramped it up a notch. But then Garibaldi would have pulled the PPG, so.
I don't know. It's, you get the feeling that Zach is a little bit more methodical, but also a little bit more high-strung than Garibaldi. His fuse is shorter when it's lit. He's like,
Right, yeah. So we have the ISN team, and they're obviously there for a propaganda piece.
Oh, yeah.
Sheridan lets them on. You know, he figures, well, what can they do to us?
Oh, my. And you have to believe that that's a little bit of the old Sheridan naivete coming through.
Yeah.
You know, and for everything that he's seen, for everything that he knows, he still believes that the media, the ISN is independent, is going to be fair. I'm like, no, you saw them storm the ISN offices. These are
right.
nothing but puppets and mouthpieces of Clark's administration. What right. are you thinking?
And when he says that, he says, you're just here to do a propaganda piece. And Randall tells him, well, we're going to do a piece whether you let us on the station or not. Here's your chance to have your say. And as they get ready to watch it, he tells a lot of us, like, well, you know, everything we said was short declarative sentences. what can they do to us?
You know? The magic.
I mean, he had at least that, right. He just didn't know how low they were going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really low.
Yeah,
I mean, get down to the whole genetic engineering thing with Delenn. Is this the face of the future for humankind? And, whoa. I mean, it was just.
Yeah, that literally, that's one of the few. This episode made me squirm.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. It was just, at some points, hard to watch. I remember seeing it the first time, and I just, you know, the whole twisting in the seat going, oh, man, they went, oh, ouch.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, yeah.
Yeah.
That's,
at the very end of the episode, when, you know, you're looking out at Sheridan, he's got his back to the camera, he's looking out the window, and Ivanova goes running away, and there's Delenn trying to start to comfort, but she doesn't say anything. It's like, everybody just clear out of the captain's room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody stay away.
Because it's one of those things where you had the best of intentions, you mm-hmm. believed that no matter what they did, you could still hold on to your truth, and that would come through. And the fact that he couldn't foresee that no matter what they did, they were going to twist it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the soldier in him at that
mm-hmm,
point,
yeah.
I think, still. Yeah.
Now here's a question. I've always wanted to talk about this. Do you think the piece would have had more impact or less impact by not having the crew on B5?
I think it would have had, if the ISN, if I understand your question correctly, if they had just created something out of whole cloth rather than going to the station, would have had the same effect?
Yes, basically.
I think the fact that they were able to actually interview the B5 command staff and get the images that they got, that's what made it so real. I think if it had just been talking heads discussing John Sheridan and what his problem is in Babylon 5, it would not have had the same efficacy. Because the images that got strung together were pretty damning. If you
yes.
were someone who was on the fence, or were at least, you know, following the party line from the Clark people, you know, and you see the shots of down below, and you see Dr. Franklin rolling a stretcher out with somebody on it, mm-hmm. and the cryotubes and the way the associations were made. It's
right.
Like, you know, that's pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah, even though they weren't connected, the way they edited them together, it made it seem like
right.
they were related.
Right. Like, yeah. There, you know, as Randall says, there's a puzzle with Babylon 5, and what is it? And we'll put it together for you. Here it is. Wait a minute, that's not what's on the cover of the box. And the irony is that there are some of the funniest lines and scenes in the episode. You know, I'm watching it and I'm busting the gut laughing, like the bit with Zach that we just talked about. Really, really funny.
Mm-hmm.
There's the scene where Londo is railing at Sheridan about the temperature in his quarters. No, it's not cold, like a little chilly. It's cold like my arm has fallen off like an icicle and shattered on the floor. And there's, you know, Sheridan with this bemused look like, you know, okay, Londo's just going on.
Yeah.
You know, and then that gets twisted around that Sheridan is... You know, he's browbeaten by the aliens who are running the place. Like, wait a minute, that was funny. How can you do that with that?
Yep. And it literally, it all is perspective. You frame it in the you frame it one way as we saw it, just a diplomat who has a history with Sheridan and who's just complaining because, you know, he got up on the wrong side of the bed or his bravari wasn't right or something. And Sheridan's going, yeah, Londo, no problem. And then you see
right.
it, you know, in a different context with the way they framed it, and it really does look like the aliens are running B5, the aliens are running Sheridan, they're going to use Sheridan to take over Earth. Oh my God, we have to do something. You know,
right.
we're in danger.
Yep.
And we're like, whoa, where'd that come from?
The other bits that in here that were really disquieting, discomforting was Garibaldi.
Oh yeah.
When you know, at the beginning of the episode where Sheridan hands Randall off to Lanier, and there's just a moment where they look at each other, Sheridan and Garibaldi. And well, actually, you know, as Garibaldi says, you know, they're talking about Sheridan, and he says, oh, you know, when you speak the devil's name, here he comes, and here comes Sheridan. It's like, well, that's a really weird association.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then at the end, when, you know, Randall says, here's your free shot, and Garibaldi says, well, he doesn't listen to anybody but the aliens now. And, man.
Yeah. That's... And you have to wonder, you know, how much of that is the programming kicking in to subvert everything he used to believe in, trying to actually slam doors so he can't go back.
Yeah. Well, if you remember when Bester finally lays it all out for Garibaldi, he mentions that Garibaldi's resignation was unexpected, but fortuitous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think some of that, I think some of it is direct programming. I think they also just found, you know, Garibaldi's natural proclivity for not trusting people is just kind of amped mm-hmm. that up a little bit.
Yeah, well, actually, I don't know. Did the programming, was that a side effect? Because, you know, later on you hear Bester going, you know, that all of, you know, some of what you did was unexpected, but did he make certain connections or voice certain observations because of the side effect of his conspiracy? He's looking for conspiracies. He's looking for people to betray him. So he's
right.
making excuses for the existence of those, and the brainwashing that Psycor did on him sort of, as a side effect, amped that little part of him up.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think that was amplified by it. And here's the irony. You know, he has the flashback as he's looking at the photo of the Drazi statue that a client has given him. Here he is, he's setting up his own business, sort of, you know, Garibaldi is lost and found kind of thing. And he has the flashback of being in the chair and the voice going, you work for nobody but us, you work for nobody but us, you know? And
yeah.
It's like, he's, you know, he ostensibly quit his job so he can go to work for himself. But it's not really working out that way, though, is it, Michael?
Not really.
And that scene with the client was that was another gut buster right there. I love that scene. You know, the guy's telling him, oh, this is a statue that's been in our family for a long time. It has no value, but it's sentimental and Garibaldi. He's like, you know, ask me if I believe in God. It's like, okay, no, I don't believe in God. Because there's a God, and somebody would sit here and not treat me like an idiot and just lays out all the, you know, basically calls him on the guy, you know, calls the guy on his story. And, you know, Garibaldi says, here's my fee. It's 500 credits up front and 20% of whatever is in there. Wow. Good stuff. We've got the telepath still in cryo.
Yes.
We see the close-up of Carolyn's name, Bester's girlfriend. We also see close-up John Flynn's name. I guess they thaw him out when they needed him to direct an episode or photography or something.
Yes, and we have, I think we have spattered throughout there. There was a names of some writers who had been blacklisted.
Yeah, in the '50s they were.
Yeah, in the '50s, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There were plays on that. Adrian Mostel, the Zero Mostel, and there was another.
Mm-hmm. Dalton Trumbo is the one I remember. Cause,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So. Yep. Yeah, yeah. Great stuff. Now, the one thing that I will say that watching it on DVD, here's where it's a lesser experience because.
Really.
You remember Summer. Like this, as I get ready for the show, and Sharon says, okay, I'm going to turn it on, but our luck is probably a commercial. When they aired that on the television, it was a commercial.
Oh.
You remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, it's like that really, it's one of those rare instances where you almost wish you had the full television viewing experience because that was, that was part of the joke. You know, Sharon says, okay, you know, our luck is a commercial. And then, you know, God knows what it was at the time. I don't have my VHS tapes of them anymore, so.
Neither do I. All my tapes have gone to better places landfills. Beyond, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, good stuff. I mean, it's really a powerful episode.
Now what do you think of how they treated Delenn?
Oh, I mean, they made her out. If anybody was made out to be the villain, it was her. Although they didn't quite say it in those words, but it was, you know, that was the ultimate goal as portrayed by ISN was the fact that Sheridan was so far gone that he wanted everybody to look like Minbari and his Minbari girlfriend, and here she is. And if it hadn't been for her, things probably would have been okay.
What was it? What did the doctor call it?
Minbari war syndrome. Yeah. Right. Well, I will say this. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. after watching this one, you remember in the episode name escapes me, but it was the 36 hours on Babylon 5, and they had the first interview with Delenn, and she's trying to be warm and open, and basically gets raked over the coals for, you know, changing into part human. Mm-hmm. This time, she is like, there's no smiles.
What was that? Was that a now for a word?
A now for a word. Thank you. Why? Okay, I explained it. You know, there she's like, she wants to be friendly and you know, I'm a friend of humanity, we're all in this together kind of thing, and gets blindsided by the questions. And this time, you know, she's got this really flinty look in her eye. You know, she's like, you're up to something, she's saying. Oh, Sheridan's sitting there all smiles and lovey-dovey, but she's like,
And that scene was like so just interesting for me because there's so much going on. You see, you know, Sheridan is completely happy that their side of the story is being told. Delenn is sitting there, I so don't trust you, and if I could have, you know, my ships blow you out of the sky before you leave with that footage, I would.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, some of the other stuff in there is funny. I love the bit with Ivanova threatening to throw Randall out the airlock. That Sheridan berates her, take the coat, take the clothes, then throw him out there.
Yes. Now, I always wanted to know, how did he get into the restricted areas he wasn't allowed into? Was that Night Watch doing? I thought they got rid of all the Night Watch
interesting
people.
Thing, but you know, it looks like it's just a branch, you know, almost like a room off to the side. Well, you know what? It's hard to say because you remember they were moving them into new cryo tubes. Okay, that was one of the things going on in the episode at the very beginning. Francis says,
right.
I need to pull staff to take care of this. So my guess is that
he just snuck in amongst the commotion.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, it looked like it's really just a chamber off of Medlab. You know, it's not like it's a secure area. So I could see them very easily, you know, there's no real person standing around there. It looked like a couple of orderlies or interns, and here comes ISN. Dr. Franklin said we could film in here. Well, okay, well, I got to go treat the Takmara. Don't touch anything, you know? So I wouldn't necessarily ascribe it to any sort of inside job at that point. They might have just, you know, found it and snuck in.
Mm. But it is interesting to posit.
Yeah.
They have help. Are there still loyal Clark loyalists on the station or not?
Well, and there may still be. I mean, I wouldn't say that. You know, as Garibaldi says, you know, we were getting rid of all the ones we know about, which leaves the ones we
mm-hmm.
don't.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this I have to believe that the humor, the little touches of humor in this episode, may have been influenced by Stephen First, who directed it.
Right.
But this is one of those episodes that it's hard to watch, but you have to watch it. And that kind of television is compelling and fulfilling and scary at the same time.
Yeah. Well, you know, as we've said before, the fact that even though you know what's coming up, having seen it before, it still has impact and power just really speaks to the quality of it. Yeah, great stuff, and it's only going to get twistier and twistier as we go forward. Oh, and one last bit. Mm-hmm. You remember at the beginning of the episode, Sheridan's sitting there in the war room and talking with Ivanova, and she calls him out on what's worrying him, and he says, well, I haven't heard from my parents. And at the end of the ISN report, they just drop this thing in. It's like, well, you know, Sheridan's a war hero, and we all want him to get better, and the family farm burned down last week, and nobody knows where his dad is.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow.
Yeah, just slide that in there. Because and literally, that's the entire finished report is the knife slowly going into his back in between the fourth and fifth ribs. And
right.
Then at the very end, oh, the family farm is burned down. We don't know where his parents are. That's the twist as it goes. And you're just, oh, geez, that's just not right.
that was just low, man.
Yeah.
It was just low.
And I think that's when you fully realize not only was it the piece geared to encourage sympathy for Clark's stance on what Babylon 5 has done and is doing, it was also a hit piece meant to hurt them.
Yeah.
And they,
right.
You know, seeing their own words twisted and used as, you know, the rain of fire arrows coming down upon them from afar, that is what's most affecting, because you sit there and you realize that's not how they meant that. Oh,
right,
wow.
Right. And the kicker, as you said, the twist of the knife is that bit about Sheridan's parents, because they know Sheridan is the kind of guy who ultimately, as painful as it all is, he's not going to ultimately care what they do with his words, because he knows what the truth is, and you know, and he believes that the truth will out eventually. But
mm-hmm.
to have that little bit just slid in, oh, by the way,
and just realizing how, because they actually changed, they actually changed some of the questioning in the finished piece, you have to listen to it, but you can actually tell. You know, they redid what they were asking.
Oh, yeah, and that scene where they're talking with Dylan and Sheridan, the shots of Dan Randall are obviously shot in a separate studio after the fact. You know, that's not, if you look at that scene, they're not sitting in Babylon 5 station quarters. He's on a soundstage somewhere else saying new questions.
And you have to, you have to applaud the effort they went to.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, if without this, would we have had the voice of the resistance?
No. No, I don't think so. I think that's a good point. I think that this ISN report brings home to Sheridan and company the fact that there's a definite propaganda war going on, and it is affecting them. It's not just simply that's something happening at home, and they need to counteract it.
So something good extracted from the colossal crash and burn that turned out to be.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on this episode?
This whole episode, you could actually probably write a journalism doctoral thesis about.
JMS reports on the Lurker's Guide that he actually was contacted by some professors at universities.
Really?
Yeah. At the time, you know, there were some who were interested in using that in their courses as examples of, you know, what can be done.
Oh, that.
You have to look out for.
Dude, that's cool.
Isn't it? It's the coolest thing ever.
That would have been. I want to see the curricula for that class if they ever did it. Anybody who took that class, let me know.
Yeah, please. Please.
That's. Oh, wow. That'd be kind of cool. I want to study B5 in a college course, damn it.
I know. I had to go to school when that kind of stuff wasn't being done.
Yeah, tell me about it. Oh, well.
Such is life.
Such is life. Well, that'll do it for our deep geeking on the illusion of truth. And you'll stay tuned. We'll give you the illusion of a promo and then come back and wrap this up.
From the writer and producer of Thesis of Fantasy. From the mind and voice behind The Adventures of Indiana Jim comes a new tale from a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Star Wars. Codename Starkeeper.
So you're Starkeeper, eh? Courier of sensitive cargo, known in circles both savory and unsavory, has 100 aliases and assumed names with transponder codes to match, intergalactic man of mystery. You're shorter than I expected.
What's your name?
Arborn Zell.
Don't give me that look, Morgan. I guess they told you my uncle was dead. That figures.
You don't want to get too close to me.
And why is that, Flyboy?
How touchy.
Zell!
The answer is simple, miss. Because he's liable to get you killed.
Now give me the data card, or I'll take you and your ship with me.
It ends now.
What are you doing on my ship?
I have the badge. I ask the questions. What are you doing in Curtin Law's personal files?
It's a story of a galactic conspiracy.
So what you're telling me is that this Dark Jedi assassinated 3 members of the Corellian Council, and everyone is engaged in a massive cover-up?
Korsak, this is Horn. I need a unit to...
Ah!
The Dorn Hanger!
Taking fire!
Oh, no, you don't!
Stop!
Blast. Be advised, suspect fleeing in a sonar ship. Looks like a Lone Scout A, modified.
It's a story worthy of the name Star Wars.
There is much you do not know, my young apprentice.
Why do I suddenly have a very bad feeling about this? Sispawn, he's speeding up.
What?
The filtration plant. He's not gonna...
You still have great value to my employer. Luckily, he won't mind if I break you myself first.
Not only will the Hutts take the blame, but the entire galaxy will fall into chaos.
Star Wars, codename Starkeeper. Available September 6th at podcast.indianajim.net.
And we are back to wrap this puppy up, so to speak, but we have more stuff to talk
and
about.
I have something here first.
Okay.
I've got something to throw out here. This actually showed up on the Slice of Sci-Fi voicemail show, and I thought it was much more fitting for you guys over here. So I pulled it out of the voicemail show and thought I'd share.
It was the dawn of the third age of mankind. 10 years after the Earth-Flamingo War, the Garden Gnome Project was a dream-given form. Its goal? To prevent another war by creating a place where humans and lawn ornaments could work out their differences peacefully. It's a port of call, a home away from home for diplomats, dwarves, lawn jockeys, and trolls. Humans and lawn ornaments wrapped in 2,500,000 tons of spinning ceramic, all alone in the night. It can be a dangerous place, but it's our last best hope for peace. This is the story of the last of the Garden Gnome stations. The year is 2258. The name of the place is Garden Gnome 5.
Yeah.
Wow. Just wow.
That's very funny. That's very well done.
Yeah, so
Commander
Bonifo,
we want you to know that the garden gnome, that the Commander Garden Gnome has been relocated to the Minbari front lawn.
Yeah, I thought I'd bring the the Garden Gnome love over to the B5 cast just to share. We've been going for, what is it now, almost 2 months with Garden Gnome Flamingo Troll stuff? Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That was...
But it actually works pretty well.
It does.
With
it does.
5,
that's
so.
Especially the, he used like the season one opening. That was.
Yeah, you know, you got the Battle of the Lawn. You know, uh-huh. You got the.
Well,
you let the Kool-Aid come out my nose.
Oh no! It gets better. In Hollywood Reporter this week, there was an announcement of a project that James McAvoy and Elaine, what's her name,
mm-hmm.
Blunt, have been attached to for voicing. It's an animated feature called Gnomeo and Juliet.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yes.
No.
If you don't think people listen to Slice of Sci-Fi, important people listen to Slice of Sci-Fi, you're wrong.
Gnomeo and Juliet. When I saw this, I'm like, okay, A, how did we not pitch this first? How is it possible that we did not pitch that first?
Somebody scooped us.
And B, wow. there better be a scene with gnomes riding charging flamingos. There has to be.
That's a given.
or attacking swarms of lawn frogs. It has to be frogs or flamingos. Either one.
Wow. And, you know, Tim, there was also an announcement this week that some very smart people are bringing back to life the Banana Splits.
Mm-hmm.
No way.
Yep.
Way.
Wow. Are they that? Have they run that out of ideas that much?
We have reached the bottom. We have reached the bottom of creativity. Yes,
they
exactly.
have.
Yes.
As long as they do a Danger Island piece, I'll be good with
Yeah, Danger Island. That was fun. Uh-oh, Chongo.
Danger Island.
They haven't just run out of ideas. They're not at the bottom of the barrel. They're scraping the rust off the rim and recycling it.
I know they're making a Land of the Lost movie, too. It's like, oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's with Will Ferrell, so, oh, man.
Yeah, I'm not...
Is he going to be a flea stack?
No, he's playing the dad.
He's playing, Will.
Yeah, so Marshall. I'm
Marshall, yeah.
I'm
sorry.
Not looking forward to that.
I know. God, that's horrible. Hey, look, I've got a couple things here.
Okay.
We've been sent some correction and clarification. These come from the website, some comments here, regarding some stuff that we've said in recent shows. So the first one I'm going to read to you, this comes to us from Dennis, who is a co-moderator on the Northwest Babylon 5 mailing list. Summer and Company, I've just listened to shows number 121 and 122, and I need to comment on what seems to be an erroneous assumption regarding B5 production rights and who insisted on recasting the roles for the Memory of Shadows. To set the record straight, and this came from JMS when he sent out his post about aborting the Memory of Shadows at its 11th hour back in late February 2005. Babylon 5 is JMS's intellectual property, of that there's no doubt, but Warner owns the name brand. Warner Brothers Domestic Television Distribution owns the rights to any and all Babylon 5, Crusade, TV cable, and DVD projects, but they do not own rights to any B5 motion pictures. Those rights remain with JMS, and I think to some extent with Doug Netter, since Warner's didn't exercise that option. In the event of feature films being made, since Warner's owned the B5 property name, Warner Brothers Pictures would market and distribute the Babylon 5 feature. As to the recasting of existing roles in The Memory of Shadows, Warner's may have had some input, but the issue was pressed at the insistence of JMS's production partner and the film's erstwhile financiers, Winchester Films, one Elling Gottsman and his partner, LA lawyer Adam W. Rosen. Winchester Films, since merged with Content Films Incorporated, was a boutique film distributor in the UK and Europe. They were the ones who sent out casting sides to agents in just about every major movie center during November and December of 2004. After 2 months of meetings and negotiations, including the partner's approach to former B5 cast members with what were tantamount to insulting salary offers, the situation ultimately became untenable, and JMS had no choice but to pull the plug. Memory of Shadow Script was commissioned by Gottsman and Rosen and has remained in their possession since the deal went south.
Hmm.
Okay.
Well, there you go.
So there you go. Thank you, Dennis, for posting that on the comment on our website and clarifying that. All right.
Yeah.
The next
Dennis. Feel free to, you know, Dennis, you should pipe up a little more often here. We could use that kind of insight. That's good stuff.
Yep. All right, here comes the next one, and this one's much more interesting. This was posted by someone who went by the nom de plume of a studio lurker. Studio Lurker writes, I came to Bab 5 late, which is ironic since I worked with Warner Brothers marketing and licensing for 6 years. And there are some things Tim said that are incorrect. Shocker. That's my editorial. JMS can't just publish more B5 on his own. He'd have to make a deal with WB Publishing, Merchandising, Licensing, and they don't make deals with print on demand. Like, ever. It's too low profile. WB is built around high-profile projects with nearly guaranteed returns and big-name actors, period. What you also have to know is that WB is not really one company. It was designed and broken up so that every division competes with every other division. If you don't make 18% more profit this year than last, you lose resources. So the heads of each division only go with what they know will make lots of money fast with the least investment of time and resources. As much time as they would put into making a B5 deal, they can make a deal recycling friends and make 10 times as much without worry about whether or not it will come back. B5 wasn't a high-profile show like ER. It didn't have big-name actors, and it's genre-niche programming. Oh, and it is genre-niche programming, excuse me. The powers that be at WB can't be bothered with a show like that. That it actually makes money for WB only infuriates them because they don't want to have to pay attention to it. Also, WB Features is threatened by WB Home Video, so Features makes sure that Home Video never has much money to pay for original programming / direct-to-DVD. If Fab Five were at any other studio where the divisions worked with each other instead of against each other, it would have been moved into Features in every division of merchandising a long time ago. On its own, at WB, without big names, it got caught in the gears. So, Tim, it's not just stupidity of seeing a profit center. It's really also about intra-studio politics and personal importance. When it becomes about ego, it doesn't matter how much money is involved. You're screwed.
That has got to be the dumbest company layout I've ever heard.
I replied to that comment. I said, if that is in fact true, I am completely baffled how that company makes money and stays afloat, because while GE's different divisions may compete with each other, if one ever actively sabotaged the other, the people running that division would be jobless. That's just stupid. How do you sabotage another division's income stream? Because that affects the entire company. That's just stupid. Nothing anybody could say would make that make sense to me. And you cannot possibly, I know for, NBC Universal can't do business like that. They can't, because GE would just, wring the body fluids out of whoever was responsible for it.
I'm torpedoing B5 so that Slice does better.
That makes no sense. It makes no sense.
I can't comment one way or the other. Studio Lurker sounds like they know what is talking about. So, Jeffrey, I mean, you're someone who's in the industry. Can you...
Any insight on this thing?
it's a miserable and tough business, and life is short. And you have to do whatever you have to do to get your kids through college.
So oh.
I'm sure that there's a great number of unwritten rules on how to engage the enemy.
But how can you consider somebody else in a different division of the same company you both work for an enemy? That's what I don't get. Now, Jim in the chat room says, is this the same company that was once known as AOL Time Warner because AOL was bigger? Now, if there are AOL people in charge of this, it totally makes sense. They need to be just deep six. They need to become shark bait. Oops, did I say that out loud?
Yeah, you did.
Okay. Sorry.
That was the outside voice, Summer. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, tell us how you really feel, Summer.
I just want people to stop making stupid decisions when it comes to entertainment. I realize it's about business, but damn. Oh, boy.
Well, I don't know what to say about it, frankly. But, you know, Jeffrey, we just need to get, Doug Medved on?
I'm sorry, did you say we have to get Doug on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not Doug, Doug Netter, but who is the Warner's exec who is in charge of D5? Mayday.
Well, there's really two of them that were extremely instrumental. There was Greg Mayday, who was a true champion of the show, and then there's Dick Robertson, who actually made the distribution deal and the original, put together the original P10 programming block and all that sort of stuff. So those are the two great champions at the network.
If I remember right, Greg made an appearance in the sock puppet segment on the Lost Tales DVD.
really?
Yeah. I don't think he had a speaking line, but as I recall, there's JMS saying, okay, we've got a way to cut the budget, and they go through the whole sock puppet thing. And at the end of it, JMS says, what do you think? And Greg just looks at him and then runs quickly away out the door.
Very funny. That's very funny.
So maybe one of those gentlemen can shed a little more light on that for us.
But they're still not going to speak as candidly as our studio lurker just did.
Yes,
so.
Because they would be hunted down. But we have minions that could protect them. We do. We could send them on assignment as bodyguards.
We have an army of 1,000 lawnmen.
No. We have the Narn Bat Squad.
This is true. We do.
And they're just itching for a fight, so I'm told.
Yeah, just give them an excuse.
Yes.
All right. Well, there you have it, people. We have some clarification. Chew on it. Digest it. Send us your emails.
Is that it?
That's it.
All righty then. We are done with this show. Oh, the inner workings of Warner Brothers. Oh, I have to let this go or it's going to make me stay up at night either crying or raging in anger. One of the two. But if you want to send us your own comments, you can send an email to babylonpodcast@gmail.com. We also have the website, babylonpodcast.com. Come back, you know, come on down, leave some comments on the many threads that are there. We've got the forums, farpointforums.com. Just do a search for it and ignore the thread with the rumor mills running. Please, there's a donate button on the website, babylonpodcast.com. Click it. Help us out. Like I said, we have this big new studio, and it needs wall coverings or else we're going to sound like we're in an airport bathroom for a while. Also, if you want to leave a voicemail, that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year the Great War came upon us all.
And we will see you next time on on the other side of the Gnome Wars.
Very nice.